We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experience will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we're going to be discussing Step 12, Part 2, the end of the line. Please welcome our panel tonight. We've got Alex and Liz. I'm going to read the first paragraph on page 96, and then one of our panel is going to start talking. Whoever feels like going first in
Go ahead,
the
go first, Alex.
moment. And then they're going to bounce between each other, and then we'll carry on to the next reading and so on. All right. So on page 96, suppose you are now making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. And then over on page 98, it is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place the dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. All right. See you, Alex.
Sure.
Hi.
Thanks, Morgan. I'm Alex. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Alex.
So sobriety dates November 26, 2009. Home group is over there in West Ghent on Wednesday night at 8 p.m. So starting with the reading, and when I get to tw step 12, implicit in the reading of I can share my practical experience with the program. It's kind of implicit that I've gone through the other 11 steps first, and I've come to some kind of realization about myself, if even just in a small way. Because I know when I first came into the program of AA, and even before that, I spent like 4 years mostly not drinking, just occasionally relapsing. I had a very good intellectual understanding of a lot of different disciplines and of spirituality and codes of morals and the philosophies that one ought to live by. But that didn't keep me continuously sober. I had to actually have the experience of going forward with the program, of taking the action. And I'd read the book, and I'd sit in meetings. I'd say, "Well, no, that can't be right. I don't like the way that sounds." And eventually, it was pointed out by my sponsor that, so why don't you have your own experience with the steps and see, how it works out for you. And so, when I get to step 12, I have that. Really, that's all I have is my experience, strength, and hope to share with other people or other alcoholics, and we're talking about just other alcoholics in this this reading, and it's yeah, I make a beginning. I can see how my sobriety at a lot of different points along the way wouldn't necessarily be like the most attractive kind of sobriety. It might be a little harsh. So I was pretty edgy, and I was doing the best I could. And really, it was the impetus for kind of wanting to be involved and engaged in AA and helping other people. I was just kind of like, well, I'll do anything to stop drinking. And that's where I was, and that's where I was at. And as I go along year after year, I grow and realize different things about myself, and just I kind of fine tune exactly what it is I'm doing with sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And it talks about the giving is great. I mean, that's awesome, and to give, but it's the practical application of that, the how, and the when, the timing, that prudence that comes with experience. Because one of the questions I can ask myself is something I learned in step nine, and the step 12 talks about practicing the principles in all my affairs. Something I learned in step nine is, if I'm thinking about any kind of amends or working with others, it's the question is, why am I really doing this? Is it for their benefit or for mine? Is it to make me feel good about myself, or is it to make other people feel good, or to really be of use to them? Is it for my own image, or is it for an actual sense of purpose? And that's what I've kind of come to realize in this program. It wasn't about teaching or moralizing or dictating. It was just, I can share my experience, strength, and hope, and if it's and it's up to other people, whether that is something they identify with or not. And there's a lot of stuff in the program I don't identify with, and that's fine. And it took a lot of humility, I think, to or humiliation rather, to get to that humility. It's that I used to think, the world was so dependent on me, and I had all this kind of over sense of responsibility. But I think from what I've observed along the way in these 16 years is that if somebody wants recovery, there's nothing I can do that's going to prevent them from getting it. And if someone doesn't want it, conversely, there's nothing I can do that's going to make them get it. So that's all I have for this reading.
Thanks for sharing. Hello, my name's Liz and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Liz.
My sobriety date is December 23rd, 2018. My home group is right around the corner upstairs on Tuesday nights at 6:30, Stockley Garden Ladies Lit. It's a women's meeting. Carry the message to alcoholics and the practice these principles in all our affairs is what we're talking about tonight. Having to do step 12 is assuming that I've had that spiritual experience because it says right there, having had the spiritual experience, my first sponsor was a 6'6" Navy guy. We didn't have much in common, but when he started talking about the way he drank, we had everything in common. And that's what I've done with sponsees when I've sponsored people, is, not telling them what to do, what not to do, who to date, who to do whatever. I just shared my experience in this. I came into these rooms wanting to do the 12 steps because I wanted to get out of jail or get out of going to jail. And that was my main motive. Somewhere along the way, I started doing them for the right reason, I guess. And I ended up having to go to jail. I spent 6.5 months in Virginia Beach, jail
for second and third DUIs. I didn't want to. At first, I did not want to come in here, but it was better off. It was better than immediately going to jail, I think. And, I could have said, well, I'll work the steps when I get a car. I'll start going to AA when I get a car and all that stuff. Well, I didn't have a car. They weren't going to let me drive. And, I had to learn my way around these rooms by asking for rides because Uber was getting expensive. And this girl had to figure out how to live 6.5 months, support a family, and being in jail at the same time. And that wasn't going to happen with me going here, there, and everywhere. Job, no job, wife, no wife. I've gone through all of this stuff with no job, with a job. I've been unemployed. I lost my first job. I was fired from my first job in 2.5 years of sobriety. I never got fired when I was working drinking. And it's like, what's wrong with you people? Don't you all love me because I'm sober? And there was a lot of things that were, it wasn't a good match. But I had to understand that that was God's plan. It wasn't my plan. I didn't start drinking because of that. I doubled down on meetings. I doubled down on sponsorship. I doubled down on doing the service work and doing the things that I know through example from my sponsors keep them sober. This journey hasn't been anything I expected it from the first year. Because when I went into jail, it was in 2019. I came out of jail 2 weeks out of, after COVID, and we were in the Zoom era. I didn't have to go to like, I basically had to check in with my probation officer on telephone. I could have done anything I wanted to, but something kept me here. And I mean, I figured out Zoom and did the Zoom meetings for a while. And so you can go, I mean, I could go around all these obstacles and I had no car. And I was at one point when I was carless living in Ghent, my home group was down at the VBRC. And that doesn't make sense, but I could get rides. And that's how a lot of people shared their experience, strength, and hope in these car rides to and from meetings. And to me, now that I look back, it was a gift and not a, it wasn't bad that I didn't have a car. I drive now and all that. But anyway, that's all I got for this one. I'll let Alex go long. He's sorry.
Thanks, Liz. Thank you both. All right. Next reading is going to be on page 98. Now, the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family may be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do. But it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness.
All right. Well, so the domestic problem, I take it. I mean, I was in my 20s when I was 21 when I first started to try to get sober, and 25 when I got continuously sober and in AA. And so I take this section, talking about the domestic, it wasn't like a literal thing for for me. But the when I think of the domestic problem, it's really talking about the people in my life, whether they're family or friends or some kind of professional acquaintances, you know, people in my life that I can't like easily dispatch with. I can't just get them out. Like they're going to be around for a while. So those are the people, that it kind of directs my attention to in terms of my actions and how I'm living, this kind of spiritual life. And the way I approach that is like once I finally got a year, like I could never get a year on my own. I think once I got 9 months, and so when I finally got a year, I was like, yeah, right on. Like, you all got a spiritual problem now. It's like I got this. Like I'm like up here, like because I hadn't drank in a whole year, and so. That must be pretty, close to God, maybe not God, but close. And so this is kind of where I take this step as I'm looking back at my experience and what I've learned along the way and the principles of the program of the steps. And I keep coming back to this kind of this code of morals that kind of slips itself in. Unbeknownst to me, and superimposes itself as kind of this spirituality that I have or that I ought to adhere by, and that's not practicing the principles that have been my experience. I learned along the way in the program. What I'd learned along the way, as the literature says, that the spirituality of AA's recovery is an intensely practical program. It's a personality change, and a lot of times my personality change is just a more intense version of the way I had been before. But I look at, especially in the inventory process, and then at step 9 and 10, and how I am, and how a lot of my decisions are based on what I'm feeling, just kind of emotion, where I'm putting emotion in the driver's seat. And that's because I mean, believe it or not, I'm a very intense, like kind of emotional, like passionate person. And it's just like this is what drives me in life to do a lot of different things. And so when I get in these states of like fear or things set them off and I have fear and resentment, I'm not operating on a spiritual plane. I'm kind of just kind of going off. But I'm not, the spirituality I think that this is trying to point me towards is that ideally I learn like the emotion that I have is like the fuel, like the gas in the tank. It's not it's what pushes the vehicle forward. I need to use my rational mind to kind of direct myself to taking inventory and how I'm how my actions are affecting others, and taking some time to kind of aim the vehicle where I'm going in some restraint rather than just kind of like this huge explosion of like giant tank of gasoline. And that's but when I do that, I do see it's certainly not magic. I mean, as people have to be open to changing themselves. But when I do that, I see how much I was with my interactions with others, is I was just buying into their character defects. Like it was just kind of like, and really what they're doing is they're trying, people are trying to like poke me and see if they can get a reaction. Like, see, does this do anything? Like, how strong is this person's psyche? And I realize how much I'm buying into it. And so when I don't buy into it, that has a really powerful effect. But again, I have to, that's kind of what I learned in the first 11 steps. And then we get into other readings. Like this, the more important application of this program is in the rest of the years of my life and activities to come. Thank you.
This one's like my least favorite part. The longer I stayed in the program, the more I drifted away from my immediate ex-wife and children. I changed a lot, let's just say that. And I had to figure out who I was. And I had to do a lot of things that allowed my ex to take a more dominant role in their upbringing. I could have fought this all in child and domestic relations and all of that, but some of them were old enough to make their own choices about me at the time. And it was difficult. And then I had the monthly resentment of alimony and child support on top of that. And I had to get over that. And that's just part of it. And I have been able to get some relations back with my older children. My younger children still live with their mother, and we speak, we text, but things happen slowly. And I have to remember, I changed a lot, not only in this whole process, but before that as well. And I kind of took them for a ride. I was about a month out from going to jail, and I was with my ex-wife, and this is how unserene I was at the time. I'm like, I want to make an amends for being trans, but I'm trans and you have to accept me. So there you go. And that obviously didn't go over so well. And I've gotten to a reasonably good working relationship with her. I'm not going to take her inventory or anything like that, although I was really good at it for a long time. And you probably heard it in these meetings from time to time. We were around over the last 4 or 5 years since I've been in Kent. But I've built another family, my sober family, my family and my community advocacy work. And that's, to me, that's what I've had, had. And sometimes you have to accept, I mean, this family's chosen family, but it's like to a point where it's not chosen family anymore. These are my people. And we have to accept each other for our faults and move forward. When I decided I wanted this for myself, it was probably about 3 or 4 months into my sobriety. And that's when things changed. And having guidance of a good sponsor is like, my sponsor finally asked me, when are you just going to be you? And stop being everything for everyone else and ask me questions like that, and was like pretty direct about things. I had hopes of possibly getting the family back together. It just didn't work. And you know what? That's okay. That's where I am now, and that's the path I think that I was supposed to be on. So anyway, that's all I got.
Thank you. Our next reading is going to be on page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances.
Well, this part of the reading, I talked about on step 12, I look back at the different principles and my experience with them, and how to bring that, and grow in those as I go forward. And that reading reminds me or focuses my attention on steps 6 and 7, where the reading describes the things that happen when I place myself in God's hands are better than imagine. And a lot of what my I would call like the growing experiences that I have in this program or the things are related to not doing what I want. When things don't work out and they don't work out for a long period of time, and I get so obsessed with this. I got this plan in my head, and it seems the vision seems so good. Although I'm just kind of I've got like a narrow vision. I'm not looking at the bigger picture. I can't see the bigger picture, and so I'm going after all these things, and things aren't working out the way that I want them to. And I get frustrated in the program, and it takes a long time for me and a lot of pain to see that that God is doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, and not getting these things. And I think this kind of like step 6, the willingness to have God remove all these defects of character, along the way. I think it's when I talk about like working on my character defects, sometimes it's just kind of just showing up and just going through the motions and just acting as if. And other times it's I start to notice as I'm practicing these principles and all my affairs that how fear it in big ways, but all, like a million little ways will keep me from doing very small things. And it like I'll take a step back, and if I'm working on the character defects, it's like I take a step forward. Like it's like I lean into that fear, like I don't fight it, I just embrace the experience and feel it. And as the years go by, I see that God is removing those defects of character. Really, it's been like I've had these opportunities the whole time. It's just I've had the blinders on, and so I can't see them because I'm so obsessed with my vision for the future, getting what I want. And I look back, and I still do that all the time. I mean, I do that. I do that so much. But in step 11, where I'm doing that prayer meditation, whether it's just sitting quietly by myself or just any point throughout the day, I kind of like I'll get like flashbacks to these periods of my recovery, and when I wanted stuff so bad, and I'll be like, oh man, I'm so glad that didn't work out that way. Like I had no idea how bad that would have been. It's just because I do a lot of stuff I really wanted was stuff that's just based on image and to make other people happy. Like some of it comes from background and culture, what I see on TV, all these little things I pick up along the way, rather than getting in tune with my authentic self, which is what begins to happen as I practice these principles in all my affairs is I get kind of more of a glimpse or a feeling of like what my true self is, and the intuition gets a little better. And it's not to say like I'm not living in like if I'm living in fear and I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna face that fear. How bad can it be? A lot of times, it's just not it's not nearly as bad as I thought it was. But sometimes it's like, oh, that was way worse than I ever thought it was gonna be. Like I didn't think I would fall on my face that hard. But all those things are like, really good. It doesn't equate to like the pain of that dry drunk or the drinking or the relapses, because I'm meant to feel these things, and that is way better. Just to be able to place myself in the hands of a higher power. But I have to constantly kind of like remind myself because I want like the security and the comfort. So that's it.
Thanks.
Let's just say this year has been an in living the life of a trans woman has been an interesting year over the last year. I could have lived this year in fear. I had a great sponsor. Having a good sponsor is a really cool thing. My sponsor is an 80, I believe she's 84 years old, British woman, born during World War II. Straight cis woman. I had to explain to her what was going on in the news every time I saw her, which was about twice a week. And I don't know if she made me do that for her or maybe do that for me. I kind of want to say she made me do that for me, but I'm like, nah, I did that for her. And it helped me understand what the difference was between facts and fear. And this year would have been a lot different if I hadn't have done that. And it took me a really, it took me a lot of reflection to even figure out what was happening at that point. You would have talked to me this time last year, the sky is falling. I'm throwing thousands of terrible political memes on Facebook, la-di-da-di-da, all that stuff. You know what? Threat's still there. And God has positioned me in a place where I can do the most positivity for who I am. And so this year's been fucking great. I don't know what it's been other than in my personal life, it's been great. I've got a great job. I get to help state and local municipalities deploy broadband and not get ripped off, which is kind of cool. And I really didn't even think I had a job that was that cool until I thought about it, which is kind of the way things happen to you in this program. A lot of my journey's just been putting myself out there and seeing what happens. I if you would ask me the day before I went to jail in September of 2019, I'll get out of jail, I'll get my old job back at Sprint, and I'll just be cruising along. It'll be so cool, and I'll come out as trans eventually and all that. None of that shit happened. Sprint, merged with T-Mobile. Like 2 days after I got out of jail, I had a hard time finding a job for a while. I found a job, got fired from the job, found a great job, figured out there were more than 12 steps to getting your license back. And going through all of that, I think it took me a lot longer to get my license back than it did to go through the steps. But, I did it one step at a time, and I didn't argue. They're just like, you need to do this next. Okay. You need to do this next. Okay. I sat in the DMV like, I don't know, like 10 times, like for almost 2 hours and went back and forth to the, but that's what I had to do. And if I wouldn't have had the program taught me perseverance and taught me that the lady up at the DMV is doing the best that she can do. If I throw a fit, it's not going to make it any better. And things worked out. I'm here. I may not be here tomorrow, but I'm here today. And for that, this is the message I have. There's hope. Because if this shit works for a crazy trans woman like me, it'll work for anyone. So thank you.
Thanks. This is all right. Also on page 100, assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. We have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go into their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be some place like the Greenland ice cap. And even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. Alex.
Well, this reading, I mean, I've of course I've heard all these readings a thousand times. Assuming I'm spiritually fit, I can meet all kinds of conditions, and it goes on to list them, and it says, yeah, if I can't do them, then there's something wrong with my spiritual condition. Well, I guess I get a lot of questions, go off in my head. It's like, how do I know if I'm spiritually fit? Because I thought so many times I was spiritually fit, and then, oh, it's like, oh, I can go to the bar, and it's like, oh, no, I can't. Oh, well, but so I don't know. I mean, I think, I think what this is kind of getting at is that, I mean, yes, there was a time where avoidance and some of these kind of normal functions of life is appropriate, but it's at some point or another, I mean, there comes a time where it's like, I gotta live, do like the full life. Like, I have to go to, receptions or like work conferences or go out with coworkers and all those kind of normal things that are gonna come up. I don't know. I don't. I think the difference is because, yeah, I would before I would say, yeah, I'm definitely spiritually fit. Like, that's a definite certain. And then, I get to the point where it's like, I don't really know if I'm spiritually fit, and there's always something wrong with my spiritual condition at any given time. That's kind of like the change in attitude and outlook, where I guess it's some honesty emerges. I don't have this absolute knowledge, but it does. If I've gone through the steps and that's also kind of the purpose of having a sponsor, listening to other people share in meetings, having friends in the program. It comes to a point where I just have to take a leap of faith and go for it and get back into the flow of life. And I do find that these things, like I'll find myself at different points in my recovery and years, like in certain aspects of my life, avoiding certain aspects of my life in like certain years, and not even realizing it. So that's a very important thing for me, to just kind of that, not living in fear and realizing, I'm not going to have that 100% metaphysical certitude, that I'm always going to have to take some leaps of faith and recovery. So, thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks. This is one of my favorite parts, because this is one of the promises, to at least to me. It's, I first witnessed something 5 months into sobriety when I went to MJ's to see my favorite bartender. He had graduated from ODU, and I watched people drink sober, and actually watched them drink. They don't drink like I do. And watching normal people drink sucks. I'm just gonna tell you. I mean, they're not doing it right. Also come to the realization that night, they don't have enough. If I wanted to drink, they don't have enough liquor in MJ's if I wanted to go. And none of the bars do. Because 1,000's never enough. One is too many. And that it's the and that's when you get into some of the first step stuff, where the spiritual malady just comes. And once I got that, I was able to be around it. I have to check my motives. And sometimes if I ain't spiritually fit, I need to go with a friend, because they'll know I'm not spiritually fit. And so I travel a lot with other people to go to places that serve alcohol and things. You know, I do a lot of community activism. A lot of that stuff happens in bars. I play gay intramural sports. They all, the thing is after kickball, go to MJ's. I go to MJ's. They have a great catfish bites. I stay there for about an hour and a half so I can eat, socialize. I'm gone. I don't need to stay here another hour and a half. If I do, I need to find a hobby. And, I go, I don't avoid moving pictures. One of my favorite shows to watch is Moonshiners. I love to watch all those guys make something simple really hard. And I don't know why I enjoy it, but yeah, it doesn't. And I, but that's what happens when you've had the spiritual experience. And I don't shun friends who drink. I mean, some of them say, am I an alcoholic? No, you don't. You're not an alcoholic. You can actually stop when you want to. No, they ask questions. They know I'm sober. I don't tell them they need to go to AA or anything like that. And I, at least today I can be around it. Some days I ain't got it. And I'm after kickball, I go home. And well, that's all I got. So thanks for letting me share.
Sharon. All righty. Our final reading is okay. We're going to be doing a little bounce back and forth if anybody's following along with their books. We're going to kick it off on page 19 and then we'll jump up to 102. All right, on page 19, none of us makes a sole vocation of this work, nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. We feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. All of us spend much of our spare time in the sort of effort which we are going to describe. A few are fortunate enough to be so situated that they can give nearly all their time to the work. And then over to page 102. Your job is now to be at a place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. And then over to page 103. After all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to. Alex.
Well, that reading kind of combines a lot of some of my favorite parts of the program, or I say favorite, the parts that really kind of got me to kind of focus and think and reflect on, what is like the AA program of recovery? Like, what do you see? Like, the program. Like, what is the program? And as far as I could tell, from my experience, the program is the 12 steps. And the literature gives a kind of a starting point for hearing other people's experiences, kind of teases things out a little bit. But there's no, in meetings as well, listening to other people share, but there's no substitute for having my own experience. So I kind of think of, the program is the steps. What are the, what's being offered to me in the steps? And I think the only thing that the God of AA for me is the God of sanity. Like, that's the kind of the only promise that I really get in the steps, is that a higher power is going to restore me to sanity. And I have to think, excuse me, I have to think as I go over the years. One time it occurred to me, I hear this kind of definition of the insanity, that kind of playful definition, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. But I never hear, like, what is the definition of sanity? Like, what does sanity look like? And what is it that I'm trying to point at? And what am I really asking God to do? Because all I want to do is just stop drinking for, at least a year. And But I think, for me, I mean, one sanity is just kind of being reasonable. So I can, if any time I encounter some kind of problem as I'm going through the more important business of more expansive of living my life and practicing these principles in all my affairs, is that if I could just look at myself from the outside and think, am I at all being reasonable about this? Like, would another reasonable person like see me and be like, yeah, you and me, we're right on the same page. And then another definition, kind of playing off that, if insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, I think sanity is trying different things and evaluating the results. And that's the that last part, I believe, was also, after all our problems were making, well, we stopped fighting anybody or anything. In step 10, where I kind of explore the idea of, like, it's not necessarily like something's wrong with me or right, but as life changes and my outer environment changes and I change, I have to, or the way people interact with me change as I get older, I have to change as well. So that kind of that restoration to sanity is kind of being in a state of adaptability. And that's important for me to remember, because I love the line, stay on the firing lines of life. Like, I really got to get out there and do it, because face fear and, like, just get out there and try different things, because I identify perfectionism as like my number one character defect. And really, that's kind of like, that's saying that my spirituality is like this code of morals that I keep coming back to. It's like, if I get out there and I try new things, or I try, doing things a different way, or I try approaching things with a different mindset or a different attitude, I might not do it perfectly, or I might fall foul of these code of morals, and that's often what life is. It's like these moral dilemmas, things are in conflict with each other. But that idea of being out on the firing line is that, things are going to go down out there on the firing line that may not be exactly what they call, like, spiritual, from a layperson's perspective. And then, sometimes even more that maybe you're not going to want. You might have to do things out there. You might not want to tell, like, the base commander everything, like the whole truth. There might be some obfuscation involved, but it's all these kinds of things, especially as I go throughout. I'm a lawyer, by the way, so throughout my profession, that I encounter, and then I can't live up to these code of morals. But anyways, that's I'm gonna leave it there. Thank you.
For sure.
Oh,
I'm glad I don't take people through the steps for a living.
Absolutely.
I'd have it in a Gantt chart, I'd have it in a spreadsheet. We'd spend this amount of hours, this amount of hours, this amount of ch -ch 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 -ch. It'd be like perfect, except it doesn't work like that because people are different. Oh, people are different. My sobriety journey has taken me. I did a lot of service work. I was in GSR, inner group, all that stuff. WIPA this, WIPA that, all that other stuff. And over the last couple of years, I've found service outside of the rooms. That's been my journey. It's been more activism, active, advocate for people who are less powerful than I am. Advocate for the homeless. That's where God takes me today. I don't know where God's going to take me tomorrow, but I have to stay open-minded and enjoy the journey as I go. My favorite thing is taking a new sponsee through the steps and reading chapter 2 and 3, because that's where you have those conversations about what it was like and how powerless I was. And then chapter 4, let's talk about God and all of that. What's a spiritual experience? Is it a William James moment? Is it a, you know, that's what I love about AA. You know, the drinking for me was just used to mask so many other things that were going on. Lack of honesty and transparency being the main thing. You know, I've had to practice, you know, I'm practicing these principles in all my affairs means, yeah, well, you know, don't tell lies at work. I was good at that when I was drinking before. Oh yeah, I was there. Just didn't get it done. I'll get it done tomorrow, you know. You know, I have spent a lot of time with sponsees, and I like that. I don't do that as much now. Just because I don't have as many sponsees. I had there for a while. I had tons of them. They were just like, and they were all, you know, all like newcomers and all that, and it was just a gift, you know. And so whenever I get one, I want to hold on to it forever, but they grow up. Anyway, that's all I got. Thank y'all for letting me share and have me
Yeah.
babble.
Thank you both. All righty, we are going to pass the seventh tradition basket. All right. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose: to help the alcoholic who still suffers. A word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements? James?
Hey, I'm James. I'm an alcoholic.
James.
Sunday, everybody knows what Sunday is. Super Bowl Sunday. That's just a preliminary. The real McCoy is here. You just feel the next Monday night. Thanks to Liz and y'all for finishing up 14 weeks in the big book. Next Monday, we're going to have dinner to speak. Hot love. Please bring a dish. Everybody don't like the same, so bring a dish. Dinner's at 6 o'clock. We're gonna have a speaker at 7. We got Tommy V coming out of Richmond.
Speaker first.
Yeah, speak. Please bring anybody. Got these nice light blue brochures up there. Take some of them back.
There's still filling trees.
Pass it out and get the crowd here. Look forward to having all of y'all. Thanks.
Thanks. I will say these beautiful on brand for the snowy weather flyers, we're not going to need to put them out next week. So I'm going to just reiterate, take them all and distribute them to your home groups. It would be much appreciated by us. You going to do this one?
Okay. Yeah, pretty alcoholic. Tuesday, so that our home groups of lactates will also be hosting a workshop on Tuesday, February 17th on Zoom called Spiritual Principles for a Lifetime. And there's also flyers available for that one as well. So we'll see you all there, 7 o'clock Tuesday, February 17th. Thank you.
Don't come
Yep,
here. That is
too many.
online only. Ben.
town hall. Hey, man, let's meditate. He says it's Friday night at 6:30 to 7:30 in and on Brandon. It's Saturday, be hosting the 1 year anniversary, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Word Yoga. It'll be great. Frank S. can be speaking and some of the folks are gonna be there.
Awesome. That's so sweet, man.
Erica Alcoholic.
Erica.
And remember, the 48th annual conference is February 20th to 22nd at the Wyndham Hotel on 57th Street.
Awesome. Oh, yeah, and I did get word, AA101's anniversary, our friends over there at the hospital, that is now going to be this Sunday. Two weekends of snow got pushed back, so show them some support. Yeah, and I think there will be bacon. Yes, definitely. There always is bacon. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Awesome. Literature is available right over here to my right, your left. With it also contains those beautiful flyers for you to take back to your groups. Please, once again, do that. They're right there. If you need a book or anything, see a home group member. Smokers, please use the butt can provided and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website at simpleactions.net. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available right here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. And if you're shy, you can always send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Yeah, reiterating that. Say simpleactions.net one more time. The meeting after the meeting. All are encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Cafe Stella just up Colonial Avenue on the left-hand side. In closing, let's thank our wonderful panel again. After we close it up, please feel free to come up here and thank Liz and Alex. And Gary's going to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
Terry, I'm an alcoholic. Hey, Gary. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you than to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day with man. Still sin. The answers will come. Your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great event past when you look at results. This is a great event. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the knowledge of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you approach the world after this. May God bless you and you and Philip.
We have a nice way of closing.
I think we do.
Let's play Bobby.
Number first. See if that distracts the speakers.
How are you? How long
have you really been packing it in here? There's 30 on
the All right, quick moment of silence, followed by the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power, and the glory, forever and ever.